Before the break, we began to talk about the Midah of Keser. And we learned, again, we're not learning Kabbalah in Yonim, we're learning in terms of Avodas Hashem, the Midah of Keser, in terms to understand who we are and how to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we learned that in that world of Keser, of the crown, there are two general madrigas. Yetz Hashem, next week we'll begin to analyze the madrigas more, but there are two general madrigas. There's what's called Chitzonius HaKeser. Chitzonius HaKeser is also called Rotzen, will. And there's Pnimius HaKeser, that is that hidden mysterious force behind all that we want. And Pnimius HaKeser is called what? Tanug, Oinig. Pleasure. Delight and pleasure. Everything that we do is motivated by something deeper, because we're hoping, we're expecting to get some pleasure, some tanug, from this particular thought, this discussion, this action. Chitzonius HaKeser and Pnimius HaKeser. Rotzen and Tanuk. And we learned a piece last time at the very beginning of the Kavanas HaMikveh in the Rav Balatanya's Siddur. We saw a few sentences in the Balatanya who describes Oneg. Tanuk, Oneg is something that comes from a part of a person that's deeper than what he understands, that's deeper than Chachma, that's deeper than Bina, that comes from a place within himself, Tanug, where when he comes to that point within himself of Tanug, all contradictions seem to melt away. The example that the Tanya was giving at the beginning of the Kavanas of Mikveh, the example that Tanya was giving is that in one's mind, you have reasons to dislike a person. And in the world of Chochmah and Bina, you dislike this person. And on a regular day, if you were asked what you think about this person, you would be able to come up with different reasons why you dislike him. But when you enter into that part of yourself that's called Tanug, in other words, if there's some great simcha at that moment in your life, you're marrying off a child, you just had the best day of learning in your life, whatever it might be, but there's some Tanug, there's some deep pleasure that you're experiencing. So then a fascinating thing takes place, that individual whom you normally do not care for, and you can find reasons intellectually why you dislike him, all of a sudden, those differences seem to melt. And the person who just got married or the person who just had a baby likes everyone, is best friends with everyone, and is able to reconcile all differences that he had with another person. So Tanya is telling us that Tanug reaches a point within a person where all of these contradictions seem to be resolved. And when a person feels within oneself the resolution of those contradictions, that's the greatest Tanug imaginable. Now we have to understand this on a deeper level, and also on a level that applies to us, that we can understand. The Tanya is talking about a very deep Indian. We're talking about Keser, the highest Midah of Keser. So we need to learn tonight the difference between Rotzen and Tanuk. Wanting, Rotzen, will, which comes from Chitzonius HaKeser, the external or lower level of Keser, and Pnimius HaRotzen, that hidden, deeper, inner drive of a person that's called Tanug, the longing to have that Tanug, that Oneg, of being in that place of yourself where everything is at peace, where everything is clear. That's called Pnimius HaRotzen. Pnimius HaRotzen. Pnimius Abba. Sometimes you'll see in this form it's called Pnimius Abba. Chitzonius Abba. Pnimius Abba. In order to understand this, and how it's Nogeya to our personalities and everything that we do, begin with a simple mashal to explain, or mishalim to explain the difference between rotzen and tanug. A person, I might have started last time to say this a little bit, now we're going to just go further. A person has a tremendous, tremendous rotzen to acquire a sefer that he heard about. He heard about a certain sefer, and he has a tremendous rotzen to acquire this sefer. The rotzen that he has, the will that he has to acquire this sefer, does not give him any peace. He has this rotzen, he makes phone calls, he goes to check on the computer, he's calling people. He has this rotzen, and that matzav, would you say that he's in a state of tanug, in that place of wanting? Is he in a state of tanug? The answer is obviously no, absolutely not. I'll use something more concrete. The guy's meshugga for a girl. Meshugga for a girl. Because the sefer thing was a little bit highbrow. Let's talk Rachel Bit Chaktan. Guy's meshugga for a girl. When he thinks of this girl, he thinks of kol mida nechayna, in terms of her midas, her ashkafas, her family, her beauty, everything. He's meshugga for the girl. He has a rotzen to acquire this young lady as a wife. He has a strong rotzen. Could be he dated her already a few times, and he has a tremendous rotzen to marry her. In that state of excessive or strong rotzen, he doesn't experience tanug, he doesn't experience pleasure or delight. Other rabbi, in that state of wanting and not yet having, in that state of wanting, if anything, he's in a place of metach, of tension, of tsar, of a certain agbas nefesh. In the case of the person who wants the book, only when he finally is able to have it, and he's enjoying it. The person who wants to marry this person, and they get married, and they live happily ever after, mitzvah Hashem. At that point, the person, the wanter, and the object of his want, of his desire, become one, right? When he has the book, then he is together with that which he wanted. When he wanted it, he was not in a place of oneg. Now that he acquires the book, he's misached. He picks up the book and he begins to read the book. He begins to learn the sefer. And he's mismazeg. He becomes integrated and one with something which until now was apart from him and therefore could be no more than the object of his desire. Now it's no longer the object of his desire that's far from him, merachok Hashem nearly. It's no longer far from him. Now he's able to enjoy, he's able to sit back and to have a meridik etanug, to enjoy the book. The moshul that chassidim always use, that tzaddikim always use in Chabad for sure, but many other tzaddikim, the moshul that we used in the past is the individual has the plan to build the house. During that time of building, he doesn't have any tanug. During the time of building, he has mostly aggravation. Mostly aggravation. With the contractor, and the architect, and the contractor, and the plumber, and the electrician. It's mostly aggravation. When will he have the tanug? When he's misached with the object of his longing and desire. When they become one. When it's finally that Friday night, that Leil Shabbos, when everything is installed and everything is working and everything is right, even the blinds, the shades, the curtains, the tiles, the carpet, whatever it is, it's done. Then he's able to be misached. The contradiction has been resolved. Until now, there were two separate realities. There was the person and there was his rotzen. There was the person and his rotzen. Finally, at this point, on this Friday night, when he's able to relax in his house, there's the yishuv hadas, the pleasure and the delight that comes with that feeling of echad, of being one with the object of his desire. Let's use a moshel going back to that couple that wanted very badly to get married. Baruch Hashem, they're married. Invariably, now that they're married, they're going to have their first disagreement. They'll have their first disagreement. And it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. He mentions something about her mother, you know. She says something about his mother. And from there, it's downhill. And it's the first fight that they have in their marriage. Here, this was the romance of the century. They were chalishing for each other. This is going to be Mamish, Romeo and Juliet, and so on. So who knows what's going to be? There was never a couple like this in the history of the world. And now they have a very bitter fight. Very bitter fight. And each one is wondering, what did I do? Maybe I made a mistake. The courageous one makes that first step and says, I'm sorry. In most cases, that's the woman, Lavdavka. The one with less of an ego takes that first step and says, I'm sorry. It really doesn't make a difference. We love each other. That moment of being mispayes, whoever has felt that with a wife, with a friend, with a parent, the moment of being mispayes with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that moment of pious, of reconciliation after being apart, when the two become one, the tanug, the oinig, is immeasurable. It's the most intense pleasure in the world. You can't compare it to him wanting to marry the girl. He didn't have her. And once he had her, because they were married, there was a distance because of the fight. On some level, if you want to use the Goyisha term, a second honeymoon, the second honeymoon is not when they go to some hotel somewhere or to some island. The second honeymoon is when they're mispayes after their first fight. You understand? The time of the ahava, of the chuppah, in a certain way is even more intense than the chuppah. Even more intense is when there was a state of hisnagdus, there was a quarrel, there was a distance, they were apart, and they wanted to get back together. And there's a reconciliation. The tanug of the reconciliation is infinitely greater and deeper than whatever the person feels during the time of rotzen. The koach of rotzen is very powerful. Even in English, it's called willpower. Willpower, the power of the will. It's very, very powerful. It's a koach dochef. It's something that pushes, that drives a person. It always comes with a feeling that there's something or somebody that's in my way. Something is in my way to getting this girl. Could be another guy. Could be she's not so interested. Could be that her parents don't like me. Something is in the way. Ratzon is always when you're in a place, in a state of what's called in Hebrew, hitnagshut, hisnagshus, conflict. And you're trying to overcome the obstacle that's in the way of you attaining that which you desire. Ratzon is a very stormy, very turbulent time when you have a ratzon, whether it's a ratzon l'tov or a ratzon l'ra. It's a time of turbulence. You're trying to break past something that's in the way. You're trying to get past something that's in the way. When there's something that's very natural to you, you don't need to have a rotzen. For instance, nobody is going to have a strong rotzen to climb into a nice warm bed on a cold winter night. You don't have to break through any mechitzas. You don't have to overcome anything that's in your way. Now, if someone's trying to hold you back from going to sleep, you can have a rotzen to get back to sleep. But what I'm talking about is when there's nobody there and you're ready in your pajamas and it's time to go to bed. To stay in bed, that's something which is tivi, which is natural. the word rotzen to be used for that, being in bed, that's a silly term to use for being in bed. Because that's just something which is comfortable, which is natural. You don't have to have a rotzen. But if it's a cold morning in the winter, and you don't have heat in your apartment or in your house, and you hear the sound, the kol, tarnagol, right? It's brought down in the Shulchan Malachim, a fascinating thing, from one of the Kadmainim. You know, there's a sound, kukuriku. So, the Shulchan Malachim says that the words, the sound that is made, kukuriku, I don't know if that makes that sound, cock-a-doodle-doo, kukuriku. He says, kukuriku, that sound of being of the bird waking up a person, is from the words ka, which means stand up in Aramaic. Ka'osi means to stand up. Ka-kariku. Ka-ka'ari, like a lion. Ka-ka'ari. Yizgabra ka'ari, ka, stand up. Ka-ka'arika. Stand up like a lion to serve Hashem. It's brought down in the Shulchan Malach. Kukariku. Ka-ka'arika. Stand up like a lion. So it's a cold winter morning. So then, you hear the Baruch Shalom saying, no. So it's going to be davening soon. You don't live in Bar Park or Williamsburg, Yerushalayim or Bnei Brak. There's no shtiblich around the corner where you could daven at 11:30 or something. There's one minyan in town, and you got to get up. Then you have to have a rotzen. You have to have a rotzen. They say the Rebbe Elimelech, the scream that he would give out when he would wake up, a scream. You would give a scream to get up to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the tzaddikim, that's natural for them. It wasn't the scream to break through, to be able to overcome the desire to stay in bed. For the tzaddik, it's the most natural thing to get up and serve Hashem. But for a regular person, on that cold winter morning, There's a hisnakshus. There's a conflict. There's a conflict between my neshama and my guf. My neshama says you have to go to shul, and my guf says shluf, abisulvaita shefila, sweetheart. You're very tired. You have a very hard life. You know, very very hard life. You have to carry around a cell phone all day long, an iPhone. It's a very hard life you have. You should sleep a little bit longer. You deserve a little bit more sleep. It's a hard life. That's what the guf says. So. In that state of conflict between the neshama and the guf, a Jew who has a rotzen, yisgaber ka'ari. Ari, Arye is the gematria gvura. Gvura. Rotzen. So then you have to strengthen your rotzen, and you have to think, I'm going to be dead in a couple of years. I have a few years here in this world. Altogether, how many shachrisen does a person have in this world? I got to get up and go to shul. What am I lying here like this? You have to mechazik the rotzen. Whatever way you know how to do that. You have to mechazik the rotzen to get up. To remember there's a bari olam, that you have a tachlis in your life, not to stay in bed. Then you have to mechazik your rotzen. But to remain in a state, and to be in a situation that's just comfortable and it's cozy, for that you don't need to have a rotzen. So whenever something is easy, then you know that it's not a place of rotzen. Rotzen is always... when you're in a state of turmoil, the true definition according to the Torah of Rotzen is when you're in a state of turmoil, when you need to overcome something in order to get what you believe is right, in order to get what you believe you or the object of your desire could be something which is terrible. God forbid. That's Rotzen. And this brings out in a very, very simple and clear way the difference between Rotzen and Tanug. Even though Rotzen is associated and comes from that midah that's called Keser, which is the highest part of who we are, the crown, it's higher than Chachma. Because a person can't always explain why he wants something. The guy can't explain necessarily why he wants that girl. He can't necessarily explain the oimek of why he wants that girl. Doesn't always know. It's something which transcends, oftentimes transcends the intellect. It comes from a higher part of the person. Nevertheless, it's always referred to in the Svarim as chitzonius hakeser, the external, more shallow level of the crown. In that place of chitzonius, when a person's in that place of chitzonius, the teva of chitzonius, the nature of chitzonius, is that there's going to be conflict and differences. Lamash, let me explain why this is called chitzonius hakeser. Are you following? It's hard. It's around 90 degrees in the room here. It's not so pushy to stay awake, so I know you're being misgabe. You don't have to do it for me. If you feel like going to sleep, it's okay. But we need to understand what this means. Chitzonius hakeser. In a place of chitzonius, lamoshen, are there any svaradim here? Don't be embarrassed. Okay. Fine. Where does your family come from?
Iran.
Come from Iran. Good. Where? From where? Mashhad, Tehran?
Iran and Esfahan.
Esfahan. Good. So, what's your name again?
Ari.
Ari? Ari. Our friend Ari comes from a background that's vastly different from everybody else here in the room. Very, very different. Again, I don't know if you were actually born there, if your family, you were born?
No, I was born here.
You were born here already. So you're more Americanized. Many of the students that I had 30 years ago, their mamash came after the revolution, and they were born in Iran. Their culture is different. Not just a little bit different. Very different. The sense of humor, what Americans find funny, Persians generally don't find funny. What Persians think is like a rip-roaring funny thing, Americans don't get. Language, food, you know what they eat on Friday night? You know what kind of cholent these Jews have?
Amazing.
They love it. It's burnt rice and some other stuff. It's green usually. It's not anything that a regular Ashkenazi would, in his worst nightmare, ever think of eating. Although, actually, some people say they enjoy it very much. Ashkenazim who have eaten it do enjoy it. The same way that Ari probably thinks that gefilte fish and chayim is something which is strange. Why would anybody want to have gefilte fish? And then if you have it, why would you want to put the chayim on it?
And the jelly on it.
And then those who had the jelly with a little carrot. It's very, very, very strange. So I would say, offhand, that nobody here in this room could be friends with Ari. None of us should be able to be friends with him. His sense of humor is probably different, although he's already more Americanized, but Safkal Sofi is Be'etzim a Persian. So his sense of humor is different. His diet, the things that he enjoys eating, different. Most likely his taste in the kind of person to marry is very different than an Ashkenazi. And even among the Sephardim, what a Persian, I've learned this over many, many years of being the Talmidim of mine, that the taste that a Persian has is not the same as a Moroccan, is not the same as a Syrian, or as a Tamani, and so on. And so it is among the Ashkenazim with different backgrounds. But it's a very, very clear difference between Ari and the rest of us here, all the Ashkenazim here. Ad kedei kach, that nimnu v'gomru, that we could come to the conclusion that we can't be friends with Ari. He's just too different. It happens that he's not particularly dark. Most Iranians are not very dark. So maybe we could manage the skin tone. But as far as many other things in his culture, you know, I hope you're not being insulted. You're not insulted.
I'm not insulted at all.
You should be proud.
Well, this is
very
accurate.
What?
It's very accurate.
Okay. So in terms of all of these things, we cannot really have much to do with a guy like Ari. Now, anybody, you would hear anybody talk like that and mean it. Obviously, you know that I'm joking. But if anybody would actually mean that, you would say, you are a disgusting racist. What kind of a Jew are you? His family could probably trace themselves much further back than any of us can. And to the original Jews. And what kind of a Jew are you? You're going to say that you can't be friends with Ari because he has a different cholent? You can't be friends with him because he has a different accent? Or a different language, or because he has a different sense of humor? Now, in the world at large, these are things that make a difference, by the way. Literature, culture, taste, and women, taste, and food make a big difference. The more chitzonius the world is, the more of a difference it makes. For instance, now you'll find an interesting thing that never was even when I was a kid. I'm not so old. Now you have a thing where people have to daven with other people that are their age. They only like to daven with people that are their age. You have to have a young married minion. Ask now, here it could be Ashkenazim or Sfadim. Try to find out from Zaydis and Bobbies whether they had back in the shtetl, whether it was in Esfahan or whether it was in Kerestir. Did you have a young married minion? No, in shul. So they wouldn't even know what you're talking about. For kid, it's just the opposite. The greatest covet was having old people in shul. When I grew up and there were old people, we were taught, you bring a siddur, you bring a chumash, you give your seat to an old person. There's no such thing as a young married minion. People want to daven now only in shtiblich, where it's our type. It's our type. One of my daughters years ago was saying that there's a certain school she doesn't think that they're, she doesn't want to go to that school, they're not her type. And I asked, what does that mean? That the girls are not your type. Well, you know, Daddy. I said, no. She says, well, they're very, like, it's very borough parky there. I prefer more like cute, normal type, not borough parky. I said, I didn't know such chilukim. Borough parky, cute, normal. I don't know these chilukim. The more chitzoini is, Dick, the more there's going to be hitnakshut. There's going to be conflict. If I were to, God forbid, measure this tzaddik over here, Ari, by what he eats and by his cultural background, then I would say that I can't have it. What's the shaykhus do I have with him? And there are people who are like that, the young marrieds. They don't want to see anybody over 35. I can't dive in the same room with somebody that's over 35. And if, God forbid, I get stuck in some place because my nephew's having an offer for something, and I got to daven in some shul somewhere, and then they put up some chazan who's dragging around for 15 minutes, gargling with his voice, making a song, I think I'm going to shoot the guy or kill myself something. I can't take it, right? It's different than me. But you're going to say, but it's only a matter of 15 minutes longer. The whole davening. It's different. I can't take anything that's different. And then there's a rotzen to get out, a rotzen to change this matzav that I'm in. In other words, what I'm saying is very simple. It's called chitzonius hakeser because rotzen, by definition, is the breeding place of willpower, of that midah of rotzen. Their breeding place of that always is more prevalent in a situation where there are differences, where there are obstacles and when there are obstructions. So there are differences between us and Ari. The pnimius, of course, is absurd. We stood shoulder to shoulder at Har Sinai. It was kind of an Irish kite, because he ended up somehow, he ended up, his parents and grandparents ended up in Iran, and ours ended up in Poland or in Germany or Hungary. We all come from Har Sinai, of Echol Kolon. We have one father. Chitzonius rotzen. What brings to machlokes is that I see myself as being different than that from that person. Even though, what are we arguing about? There's a guy that left the shul a couple years ago because he was upset that he had asked a number of times to have a certain kind of herring at Shalosh Sudas, and he felt that he was not being heard. I'm not making this up. He felt that he was not being respected, even though he claimed to have loved the davening, he loved the learning, everything was great about the shul, but he felt disrespected because he likes a certain kind of herring, and he didn't find it. It wasn't happening at Shalosh Sudas. I'm giving very silly examples, but he sees himself as being in a state that's irreconcilable. He can't be reconciled with the shul because it's a different herring. There are much sillier things than that, by the way, that break up lives and families and friends and so on, than a piece of herring. But you all know stories. An Irish guy. But because I'm in a place that's on the surface of things. On the surface, Ari is very different than us. Now, when I dig deeper into Ari and into myself, and I dig deeper into both of us, then of course I find the unbelievable tanug, the pleasure of what I what seemed to be on the surface different and irreconcilable. But then when I get underneath all those superficial things about food and culture and humor and all of that, which is superficial, and when I get to the pnimius, which is a tremendous tonic. Let's go back to the husband and wife who have their first fight. They really do love each other. They got into a fight about the mothers. It's a very dumb thing. But they got into a fight about the mothers. I once read that this goes back like 20 years. That is the most common cause for divorce is meddling in-laws. The second is religion. The third is money. So because of mother-in-law, whatever, they had a tremendous fight. That's only on the surface. It's machloikis on the surface. But when they're choder, when they penetrate to the pnimius of who they really are, when they're in that place of pnimius hakeser, there's a reconciliation which brings tremendous oneg. Because we felt that we were far apart. And there was something in the way. And we came to that place within ourselves of echad, that is one. And there's a feeling of tanug. Wherever there's echad, whenever there's a reconciliation of separateness, of differences, then there's a tremendous tanug, there's a tremendous oneg. Oneg is not a place of differences. Oneg is not a place of wanting, of turbulence, of turmoil, of desiring. Oneg is the place of having. Of having, and that and the reconciliation of all differences, that's a place of tanug. And therefore, if we were to compare two different types of people, you have an ish hatanug and you have an ish harotzen. I know that's not found in Rav Soloveitchik's typologies, but it certainly is one that we could understand from the Svarim HaKadoshim. We have a person who is primarily a person of tanug, as opposed to a person of rotzen. So these two types, obviously we have mixtures, but let's say somebody who's predominantly a person of tanug, he's always looking to find the common denominator in everything. One of the trademarks of the ish hatanug when it comes to learning is that he's a lamdan. A lamdan is able to look at a confusing sugya, at a difficult sugya that seems to have 100 moving parts. And what does the lamdan do? The lamdan is able to find, he's looking for the unifying principle. That's what lamdan is, right? He's looking for the unifying principle. When you hear a beautiful Torah from Rav Chaim Brisker, a beautiful Torah from the Rav, a beautiful Torah from the Ragachov, from the Avinezer, there's no greater tanug in the world. You know what's so great about that tanug? Until now, all I heard was noise, commotion, and I had this tremendous rotzen, a tremendous rotzen to understand the Blat Gemara, to understand the sugya. And in that state of rotzen, I heard the dissonant sounds of machloikis, of 100 different shittas at war with each other, and 100 different opinions, tanoim and amaroim in the Gemara, over the course of 10 blat in the Gemara. And along comes Reb Chaim Brisker, or along comes his Talmud Reb Shimon Shkop. Along, if you go from Poland, comes the Avnei Nezer. And the Tzaddik says, no, the Be'emes, there are two dinim in the Gemara. He takes 1,000 voices, the commotion, the noise, and he makes them into two. On a deeper level, he's able to even show, Eilu ve'eilu, what? Divrei Elokim Chai. Both these and those are the words of the living God. The tanug that one feels from the reconciliation of machlokes is the tanug that you feel when you learn a beautiful piece of Torah. The tanug of a beautiful piece of Torah. That feeling of, that's what I was looking for. Now I understand. Because as long as you were trying to make heads and tails out of the sugya, as long as you had that rotzen to try to make heads and tails out of the sugya, you were in a place of machlokes, of turbulence, of upheaval. Is everybody following? You're in a place of upheaval, commotion, busy. And then when you finally understand what Reb Chaim is saying, or one of the great lamdim, you understand what that tzaddik was saying. Or when you're having a disagreement and there's an eitzah that somebody gives the two of you to make shalom, and the eitzah is something which is misyashev al halev, it makes sense. That lomdus, that eitzah, fills the person with a tremendous tana. The ish ha'oinig, the person of tanug, spends his entire life and his entire way of thinking is how to reconcile, how to make 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1,000 into one, how to come to that place that's called Pnimius HaKeser. The Pnimius HaKeser, Ari and I, could be best friends, without a question. It's a joke. All the differences on the surface are a joke. The lumdus of our friendship is that our friendship is not based upon food. It's not based upon language or a dialect. It's based upon that which binds us together. That's the lumdus. That's the Reb Chaim. That's the Rogachev. You understand? That's the lumdus. In relationships with people, in how a person lives his life, the ish hatanug. How does he relate to his children? Again, I'm bringing this very much down, all the way down to Rachel Bidchaktan. How does the ish hatanug take care of his family? How is it different than the Isha Rotzen? The Isha Rotzen is a person who very often imposes his will upon his family. He has a conflicting will. He doesn't see eye to eye with his wife. He doesn't see necessarily, when they do, that's great. But if he doesn't, he doesn't see eye to eye with his kids. So the kid wants to spend his third year in Eretz Yisrael, and the father doesn't want that. Or the kid wants to major in, ancient Indian finger painting or something. And the father says, I really don't think it's a very practical, parnasa. So the Ish HaRotzen will very often, in that state of conflict, because he is a person who is one of strong willpower, the Ish HaRotzen will oftentimes impose his will upon others. World leaders, politicians, machers. Doesn't have to be a world leader. It could be a macher. Again, these people generally accomplish a great deal, but oftentimes it's by imposing their will upon others, not reconciliation, an imposition of will. Their will is stronger than the other person's will. They know how to speak. They're stronger physically, they're stronger in terms of their intelligence, and the way of willpower is to overpower the one who is weaker. Heads of organizations, leaders, and so on. Oftentimes, these are people that have the strongest rotzen. Wealthy people. I'm not talking about ones who just inherited wealth. There are certain wealthy people that even if they lose all their money, you know they're going to be millionaires again. They just have that way of doing it. And oftentimes, in order to accomplish that, they leave a lot of casualties along the way. They overpower. They outsmart. They want something, they get it. I've mentioned this before many times in shul, there's such an obvious difference, not always, but I would say more often than not, between how a wealthy person speaks, how a wealthy person addresses somebody, and a simple, poorer person. I was at a Levaya, Lo Aleinu, last year, and we were walking behind the Aron and saying, Yoshi B'Seser Elyon. A fellow comes over to me, I didn't know who he was. Very, very expensive jacket, tie, little thing coming out, you know, growing out of his pocket. Very, very, very put together guy. Comes over, we're walking in, say, Yoshi B'Seser, comes over, he says, Rabbi Weinberg, I said, yes. He said, I'd like to see you today at 3 o'clock. I said, I'm not available at 3 o'clock. Besides, we're walking here with a mace. If you'd like, you can give me a call. He couldn't believe it that I said to him, no. I don't know when the last time in his life he ever heard that. Certainly not from his wife and children. They wouldn't dare. He was so put off, he told a bunch of people. That's the only conversation I have with him. I just said, you could call me later. I'm just not available at 3. I said in a very nice way. I said, I don't think it's a good time to talk about this, but please give me a call. I find out he called this Rav, he called that Rav. I got calls from other people telling me, you know, Mr. So-and-so, he was very put off that you... We're talking here about multi-millionaire. He's used to accomplishing things with raw will, intimidation, conflict, overpowering. If you're on their good side, these are some of the most fun people in the world to be around. But if you're on the bad side, it's bad. They live in a constant state of warfare. And the only reason why they might not be engaged in the warfare at the moment is because the other one has already lost or is just too intimidated. There are many, many marriages like that. And if you asked the guy, he would say, yeah, we have a great marriage. We're married 50 years. For 50 years, he's been telling her best friend, I hate this guy. I daven that he should get into an accident on the highway. And he thinks that they have the best marriage in the world. She wouldn't dare tell him. She's out of her mind. She's out of her mind to say something, to speak up, to express her rutzen. She wouldn't dare. Now, rutzen's not always bad. I'm just giving you an example of how rutzen is being bred. It breeds in a place of conflict and overcoming conflict. In a negative way, it can be very, very destructive. In a positive way, these, of course, are the most accomplished and industrious people on earth. But it's called chitzonius hakeser. Does everybody follow? It's called chitzonius hakeser. Because in chitzonius, there's conflict. Let's talk about the isha tanug. The isha tanug. Him and his kid, they're not seeing eye to eye. He's got a son. He's a teenager, he's got a big mouth, he's a wise guy, and they don't see eye to eye. The Isha Ratzon will usually, in this state of conflict, he might very often just overpower the son and very quickly come to using threats, intimidation, and so on to get what he wants. You're not going, he'll say something like, oh, you're not going to that school. You're not going to that school. I want to go to school. You're not going. I want to marry this girl. Oh, no, you're not marrying her. And then you try to go talk to your mom. If mom could talk to dad. Mom's got her own problems with dad. Oh, you're not doing that. The Isha Ratzon, remember, he's in a place of obnoxious, of conflict. He wants something. His kid wants something else. May the best man win. The Isha Tanug is altogether different. The Isha Tanug is not trying to control the son. He tries to understand the son. He tries to understand where is that part inside of the two of us, what is that place inside the two of us, even though after all of these years we've gotten a little bit different, he has different views and I have different views, but what is it that we have in common? What part of that child? Is it possible for me to climb into that child? Why does he want to go to that school? Why does he want to marry that girl? What is it about him? Who is he? The Ish HaTanug, again, I'm making these pure typologies. Obviously, we have all of these things going on at the same time. That the Ish HaTanug is always looking for the Nekuda HaPnimis, for the inner point of reconciliation. The Ish HaTanug is trying to understand, who is this kid? Not what do I want from this kid, but who is the kid? And he's ready to give up certain things that he might want of the kid in order to be able to be reconciled with the child, to be able to be together with the child. The Ish HaRatzno often sits at the Shabbos table very annoyed because he's surrounded by people who disagree with him. The Ish HaTanug has tremendous pleasure being with his family, even though they have differences, even though they might have arguments, they might have disagreements. But he has a tremendous tanug. Because the Ish HaTanug, the Ish HaOinig, who lives in the world of Pnimius HaAbba, Pnimius HaKeser, to him, that which joins them together, the common denominator, the Pnimius, is infinitely more important than the Chitzonius, than the conflict. That's why, I'll give you one second, that's why in the couple, who is the one who will first apologize? Very often, it's the one who is right. And she will still say, I'm sorry. Sometimes it's the guy, I'm sorry. Why? Not because he or she has necessarily changed her mind on the subject, but the thought is as follows. What's more important to me? What's more important to me? My marriage, or that I should be right in this argument? My marriage. What's more important to me? The reason that we got married, all the things that we have in common, or this stupid argument that we're having, and to be right in this argument. So that individual will step back and enter into a place, that place that's called Tanug HaNefesh, of reconciliation, will go into that part of herself or himself that's called Pnimius HaKeser, and from that perspective, everything is one. Just like going back to Ari and us, from the perspective of Pnimius, what's the chilek between a Persian Jew and a Polish Jew? It's ridiculous. It's all on the surface. So you could either be somebody, I was recently in California and I was giving talks over there, and in one of the talks that I gave, I was talking about Inyan of Shalom, and I started to scream during the shmooze about how what people make all these chilukim between Hungarians and Galicianas and Svardim and Chassidim and Litvaks and Lubavitches and all these things. I was very upset. So this person came over to me and said, Rabbi, I agreed with everything that you said, except Galicianas. Galicianas, I don't go for that. And I thought he was maybe being serious, and he just gave me a wink. He said, no. But he said, Galicianas are not good people. What is it that you have? There's somebody that wears this kind of yarmulke, that kind of a yarmulke. Somebody that wears this kind of a hat, that kind of a hat. Somebody that is a chassidish person, is not a chassidish person. So chitzonius, that's the cause of there being a tremendous obstacle to their friendship. And pnimius, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. What makes people so emotional? Like if right now there'd be a contingency that would come into this room from Williamsburg, from Lakewood, from Crown Heights, just because they want to be together with boys from YU. Photographers would come here, right? And take pictures and say, look at this. And there's some guys that come in, Chayalim. And all these Jews are listening to, and everybody's crying with it. They're feeling so good about being Jews. This would be mamish on the front page of the Jewish newspapers, that guys from Williamsburg and from Toldos Aaron in Meir Shearim came to YU, be in the headlines of all the papers. And we'd all be holding hands and hugging each other, that we're able to have shalom, even though it was so different. The truth of the matter is that that's sickening. That's sick. It would cause that kind of emotional outburst. But that's pathetic that it would cause that kind of emotional outburst. The truth of the matter is, what's the difference? Because this guy's got long earlocks, and I don't. Or what's the difference? Because he has, this guy's wearing white socks, and this one doesn't, whatever it is. All of these things are chitzonis. Chitzonis. The Ish HaTanug lives in that place of pnimius. And therefore, we need to understand when Chazal say, Ritzoncha lasas ritzoneinu. Our will is to do the will of God. The will of a Jew is truly to do the will of God. What does that mean? Ritzoneinu lasas, you wanted to say something, or to ask something.
Yeah, to clarify, the Ish Tanug, he doesn't see the chilukim?
No, he sees the chilukim. I mean, they're big tzaddikim, I don't know, maybe the Baditshva, Rabbi Levine, these types, I don't know. But for the most part, no. They're very worldly people, and they're sharp, and they're with it, and they see the chilukim. And he knows the history of Ari's family, he knows the history of his family, and he sees the chilukim. But the chilukim to him are inconsequential. They're inconsequential. The husband and the wife, so the one who's in that place of tanuk, she sees the chiluk between herself and her husband regarding this point of view, but it's inconsequential to her. Because she wants one thing. She wants the tanuk of their being together, of their being one, of their being in love. That's what she wants. She wants the tanuk of oneness. Echad is the source of all tanuk. Reconciliation, being together, echad, that comes from the highest place of the kesher, that comes before there was any division or separation. That's why there's nothing that gives a person more pleasure. That's why it's such an emotional thing when the Satma guy walks in, and the Svardi walks in, and the Lakewood guy, and the Lubavitcher, and everybody's doing a rikud together. Because in our smallness, in our silliness, we see this as being some sort of a historical reconciliation, that we're able to have a dance together. It's pathetic because it shouldn't be historical. It should be very obvious. What's the difference between one Jew and another? But it's historical because we don't usually get along with each other, you know? So now it's historical. It feels historical. Why is everybody getting all worked up? Because you're coming back to that place of Echad. When it's a time of war, Lo Aleinu, during the summer, and the three boys in June were kidnapped and they were killed, Lo Aleinu. The whole Klal Yisrael felt a taste, a ta'anug, at the same time that we felt the anguish of the boys and their families, we also felt a tanug. You know what I'm talking about. What was the tanug? The tanug of being in that place where it's so clear that there is no difference between those other Jews who I normally don't have a shaychus to and myself. And every single Jew, regardless of his background, regardless of the type of hat that he wore, every single Jew was davening for the children. Every single one felt for their families. Every single one. And there's the deepest tanug that comes with that. The deepest tanug. So it doesn't mean not to be aware of the differences. It means to see them as inconsequential, and it means to be a person who looks at everything from that perspective of echad, of being one. So when we say Ritzoneinu lasas Ritzoncha, when we say, when Chazal say such a thing, let's just finish now. Ritzoneinu lasas Ritzoncha. It means that there are many things in our way, Hashem. There are many things that are conflicting with the deepest rotzen that my nefesh elokis has. My nefesh elokis has a deep rotzen to serve you. My nefesh elokis has a deep rotzen to daven and to learn. My nefesh elokis has a deep rotzen never to look at that stupid, disgusting picture or to look at anything bad. My nefesh elokis is ritzoneinu lasas ritzoncha. Because the inner rotzen, the inner will of a Jew is kuloi zera emes. It's the rotzen of the neshama. The Ratz on the Sham is that the Rebbeinu Shlom should have a dear b'tachtam, that the Shekhinah should be here in this world. Now, even though mitzad my chokhmah and bina, mitzad my intellect, I don't understand that, and I don't even know why that's important to me to remain a Jew. And yet, as the Tanya says, Nirches and Yates, I feel a kal shabba kalam, I feel a paishi shabba, even sinners, even Jews who are the furthest away from Yerushalayim are prepared to give up their life rather than convert to another religion, rather than to give up their Yiddishkeit, they'd rather die. And this has been proven, unfortunately, had to be proven millions of times throughout history. It means that there's a rotzen inside of me that I don't understand. And that rotzen is prepared to overcome and overpower anything that's in its way. And even this guy says, I'm going to kill you unless you convert. It doesn't mean anything to you. And you're not intimidated and you're not frightened. There's a ha'aloma, there's that deepest rotzen that we have in our intellects we don't understand. And because it's missing, and we don't understand, we don't think about it, therefore we don't feel that rotzen. We don't feel that rotzen. And we're not strong enough to overcome the obstacles that are in the way of that rotzen to be a Jew. On the other hand, the guf also has rotzens. The body also has a rotzen. The nefesh of Bahamas also has a rotzen. Person has a rotzen to smoke a cigarette. Even though his chochmah and bina tell him, what are you doing? That's crazy. That's killing you. What are you doing that? You're destroying your body. Or your 10th serving of french fries that week or that day, whatever it is. Or your fourth falafel. This stuff is killing you. Your chochmah and bina understand that. The guf has a certain rotzen nelam. It has a certain willpower that seems sometimes to be a will of its own. And you don't even know where that comes from. Because the truth of the matter is, the deepest tanag of a Jew is what the Ramchal says at the very beginning, is the purpose of our being in this world is what? Lehis aneg al Hashem. That's the beginning of Mesil Zashar. Lis aneg al Hashem. Lis aneg al Hashem, meaning to be mekusha to the essence of who I am, to be back in that place of echad, of one, where there's no conflict between my neshama and my guf, between my stupid, superficial will and the deepest will of who of the nefesh elukis. When that conflict is resolved, that's called lis aneg al Hashem. Could you imagine enjoying a geshmake davening? A geshmake davening. Lis aneg al Hashem? More than you could ever imagine enjoying the most geshmake thing in Gashmius, whatever that is, I don't want to hear about it. But you know that when the Kedush Levi, you know that when Kedush Levi came back after, you know Kedush Levi fasted 2 days, Yom Kippur. You know that. Kedush Levi fasted both days. He was nervous about Sveki the Yom and Yom Kippur. He fasted without eating in between. Kedush Levi would fast. Now we can't be masik that, because we can't be masik the avoid of the Kedush Levi. He davened all the tefillahs of Yom Kippur from the Amud, jumping and screaming and yelling and running around the whole Bais Medrash. And after that, he didn't eat. And they say that when he would come home the whole way, he would say, is this going to be Geshmak? Ooh, and everybody was thinking about supper, right? About having something after Yom Kippur, after Nilus going back, after Marv. And everybody would sit down. They made Havdolah, they would have their coffee and their cake. And the Kedusha Slaver took out Masech the Sukkah. And he said, ach, who is this Geshmak? Mamashi says a delicacy, Masech the Sukkah. Or the tzaddik that said, after davening on Yontiv, for a long, long time, the Yontiv davening is finally over, whatever it was, Pesach, Sukkah's morning, it was done in the afternoon, he says, no, now I finished the Chatzi Lachem, and I have to go eat, that's the Chatzi Lachem, the Chatzi Lachem. So my davening is, the davening is so geshmak. Okay, I have to do, Hashem told me to eat on Yontiv, I have to go home and eat. That's the Chatzi Lachem. Lis aneg el Hashem, where Hashem's will and my will are not conflicting. It's a tanuk. It's that place of tanuk. Now, next time it's next week, we'll see this piece that's photostat in front of you, which is a very simple piece, Bor al Derech HaMusav, of our job as Rebbeim, as teachers, and even with ourselves and our children and so on, is to be able to bring ourselves, our children, our wives, our students to a place where they understand, where the greatest tanug in life, not that there's a conflict, being a Jew is the greatest tanug imaginable, is the greatest pleasure imaginable. It's not God imposing his will upon us, it's having the greatest pleasure of being Jews. So we'll pick up on that mitzvah next week. We've got Marv now.